Chapter 64. Is jealousy nothing? Said Rebecca. He makes me miserable about you. And whatever it might have been once, my heart is all his. I am innocent now. Am I not, Mr. Sedley? All Joe's blood tingled with delight as he surveyed this victim to his attractions. A few adroit words, one or two knowing tender glances of the eyes, and his heart was inflamed again, and his doubts and suspicions forgotten. From Solomon downwards, have not wiser men than he been cajoled and befooled by women? If the worst comes to the worst, Becky thought, my retreat is secure, and I have a right-hand seat in the barrage. There is no knowing into what declarations of love and ardor the tumultuous passions of Mr. Joseph might have led him, if Isidor the valet had not made his reappearance at this minute, and begun to busy himself about the domestic affairs. Joe's, who was just going to gasp out an avowal, choked almost with the emotion that he was obliged to restrain. Rebecca to Bethidor, that it was time she should go in and comfort her dearest Amelia. Au revoir, she said, kissing her hand to Mr. Joseph, and tapped gently at the door of his sister's apartment. As she entered and closed the door on herself, he sank down in a chair, and gazed and sighed and puffed portentously. Hat coat is very tight for Myler, Isidor said, still having his eye on the frogs, but his master heard him not. His thoughts were elsewhere. Now glowing, maddening, upon the contemplation of the enchanting Rebecca. Anon shrinking guiltily before the vision of the jealous Rawdon Crawley, with his curling, fierce mustachios, and his terrible dueling pistols loaded and cocked. Rebecca's appearance struck Amelia with terror, and made her shrink back. It recalled her to the world and the remembrance of yesterday. In the overpowering fears about tomorrow as he had forgotten Rebecca jealousy everything, except that her husband, and was gone, and was in danger. Until his dauntless worldling came in, and broke the spell, and lifted the latch, we two have forborne to enter into that sad chamber. How long had that poor girl been on her knees? What hours of speechless prayer and bitter prostration had she passed there? The war chroniclers who write brilliant stories of fight and triumph scarcely tell us of these. These are two mean parts of the pageant. And you don't hear widows' cries or mothers' sobs in the midst of the shouts and jubilation in the great chorus of victory. And yet when was the time that such have not cried out? Heartbroken, humble Protestants, unheard in the uproar of the triumph. After the first movement of terror in Amelia's mind, when Rebecca's green eyes lighted upon her, and rustling in her fresh silks and brilliant ornaments, the latter tripped up with extended arms, to embrace her a feeling of anger succeeded, and from being deadly pale before, her face flushed up red, and she returned Rebecca's look after a moment with a steadiness which surprised and somewhat abashed her rival. Dearest Amelia, you are very unwell, the visitor said, putting forth her hand to take Amelia's. Had is it? I could not rest until I knew how you were. Amelia drew back her hand. Never since her life began had that gentle soul refused to believe or to answer any demonstration of goodwill or affection. But she drew back her hand and trembled all over. Why are you here, Rebecca? She said, still looking at her solemnly with her large eyes. These glances troubled her visitor. She must have seen him give me the letter at the ball, Rebecca thought. Aunt be agitated, dear Amelia, she said, looking down. I came but to see, if I could, if you were well. Are you well? Said Amelia. Dare say you are. You don't love your husband. You would not be here if you did. Tell me, Rebecca, did I ever do you anything but kindness? Indeed, Amelia, no, the other said, still hanging down her head. When you were quite poor, who was it that befriended you? Was I not a sister to you? You saw us all in happier days, before he married me. I was all in all then to him, or would he have given up his fortune, his family, as he nobly did to make me happy? Why did you come between my love and me? Who sent you to separate those whom God joined, and take my darling's heart from me, my own husband? Do you think you could I love him as I did? His love was everything to me. You knew it, and wanted to rob me of it. For shame, Rebecca, bad and wicked woman, false friend and false wife. Amelia, I protest before God, I have done my husband no wrong, Rebecca said, turning from her. Have you done me no wrong, Rebecca? You did not succeed, but you tried. Ask your heart, if you did not. She knows nothing, Rebecca thought. He came back to me. I knew he would. I knew that no falsehood, no flattery, could keep him from me long. I knew he would come. I prayed so that he should. The poor girl spoke these words with a spirit and volubility which Rebecca had never before seen in her, and before which the latter was quite dumb. But what have I done to you, she continued in a more pitiful tone, that you should try and take him from me? I had him, but for 6 weeks. You might have spared me those, Rebecca. And yet, from the very first day of our wedding, you came and blighted it. Now he is gone, are you come to see how unhappy I am? She continued. Who made me wretched enough for the past fortnight? You might have spared me today. I never came here, interposed Rebecca, with unlucky truth. No, you didn't come. You took him away. Are you come to fetch him from me? She continued in a wilder tone. He was here, but he is gone now. There on that very sofa he sate. Don't touch it. We sat and talked there. I was on his knee, and my arms were round his neck, and we said our father. Yes, he was here. And they came and took him away, but he promised me to come back. He will come back, my dear, said Rebecca, touched in spite of herself. Look, said Amelia, this is his sash, isn't it a pretty color? And she took up the fringe and kissed it. As he had tied it round her waist at some part of the day. As he had forgotten her anger, her jealousy, the very presence of her rival seemingly. For she walked silently and almost with a smile on her face, towards the bed, and began to smooth down George's pillow. Rebecca walked too, silently away. How is Amelia? Asked Joes, who still held his position in the chair. There should be somebody with her, said Rebecca. I think she is very unwell. And she went away with a very grave face, refusing Mr. Sedley's entreaties that she would stay and partake of the early dinner which he had ordered. Rebecca was of a good-natured and obliging disposition, and she liked Amelia rather than otherwise. Even her hard words, reproachful as they were complimentary the groans of a person stinging under defeat. Meeting Mrs. O'Dowd, whom the dean's sermons had by no means comforted, and who was walking very disconsolately in the park, Rebecca accosted the latter, rather to the surprise of the major's wife, who was not accustomed to such marks of politeness from Mrs. Rawdon Crawley, and informing her that poor little Mrs. Osborne was in a desperate condition, and almost mad with grief, sent off the good-natured Irishwoman straight to see if she could console her young favorite. I've cares of my own enough, Mrs. O'Dowd said, gravely, and I thought poor Amelia would be little wanting for company this day. But if she's so bad as you say, and you can't attend to her, who used to be so fond of her, faith I'll see if I can be of service. And so good morning to ye, madam, with which speech and a toss of her head, the lady of the Repether took a farewell of Mrs. Crawley, whose company she by no means courted. Becky watched her marching off, with a smile on her lip. As he had the keenest sense of humor, and the Parthian look which the retreating Mrs. O'Dowd flung over her shoulder almost upset Mrs. Crawley's gravity. Am my service to ye, me fine madam, and I'm glad to see ye so cheerful, thought Peggy. Tease not you that will cry your eyes out with grief, anyway. And with this she passed on, and speedily found her way to Mrs. Osborne's lodgings. The poor soul was still at the bedside, where Rebecca had left her, and stood almost crazy with grief. The major's wife, a stronger-minded woman, endeavored her best to comfort her young friend. You must bear up, Amelia, dear, she said kindly, for he mustn't find you ill when he sends for you after the victory. It's not you are the only woman that are in the hands of God this day. I know that. I am very wicked, Very weak, Amelia said. She knew her own weakness well enough. The presence of the more resolute friend checked it, however, and she was the better of this control and company. They went on till 2 o'clock. Their hearts were with the column as it marched farther and farther away. Dreadful doubt and anguish, prayers and fears and griefs unspeakable followed the regiment. It was the women's tribute to the war. It taxes both alike, and takes the blood of the men, and the tears of the women. At 2:30, an event occurred of daily importance to Mr. Joseph. The dinner hour arrived. Warriors may fight and perish, but he must dine. He came into Amelia's room to see if he could coax her to share that meal. "Try," said he, "the soup is very good. Do try, Emmy," and he kissed her hand. Except when she was married, he had not done so much for years before. "You are very good and kind, Joseph," she said. "Very body is, but, if you please, I will stay in my room today." The savor of the soup, however, was agreeable to Mrs. O'Dowd's nostrils, and she thought she would bear Mr. Joe's company. So the two sat down to their meal. "Gee, God bless the meat," said the major's wife, solemnly. She was thinking of her honest Mick, riding at the head of his regiment. "'Tis but a bad dinner those poor boys will get today," she said, with a sigh, and then, like a philosopher, fell to. Joe's spirits rose with his meal. He would drink the regiment's health, or, indeed, take any other excuse to indulge in a glass of champagne. "He'll drink to O'Dowd and the brave TH," said he, bowing gallantly to his guest. "Eh, Mrs. O'Dowd? Fill Mrs. O'Dowd's glass, Isidor." But all of a sudden, Isidor started, and the major's wife laid down her knife and fork. The windows of the room were open, and looked southward, and a dull distant sound came over the sun-lighted roofs from that direction. "Had it?" said Joes. "Hi, don't you pour, you rascal?" "C'est le feu," said Isidor, running to the balcony. "God defend us, it's cannon," Mrs. O'Dowd cried, starting up, and followed to the window. 1,000 pale and anxious faces might have been seen looking from other casements. And presently it seemed as if the whole population of the city rushed into the streets. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.